Welcome to Digging In, Unearthing Stories of Climate Adaptation, a Lynx podcast series. I'm Cara LeBlanc. Climate change isn't just in the ground and in the weather patterns. It's also in our heads, literally. If you think about it, when things change in our physical environment, we try to make sense of it in our minds. Job Arnold, Associate Professor of Psychology and Conflict Resolution Studies, is looking at the psychological and social impact of climate change adaptation. He wants to understand how Zimbabweans understand climate change. I found two of the last empty chairs in the Marpeck Commons mezzanine here at Canadian Mennonite University to sit down with Job. All the activity and chatter happening around us faded into the background as I was drawn into our conversation.
My particular focus is concerned with how kind of the effects of climate change are impacting both individuals and communities. And then also how that is intersecting with the way people handle conflict. So if it's creating more conflict, if there are kind of robust systems of conflict resolution in place that are working, if there's concerns that are connected to greater kind of resource scarcity and things of that nature.
Job is using a psychosocial readiness model to measure how people are adapting. One category looks at how much someone understands about what is happening, how prepared they feel, and their connection to faith or a higher purpose. Another category looks at how people deal with uncertainty and the ways people think about climate change. The last category looks at how much conflict individuals experience in the process. During his time in Zimbabwe, Job and a team of Zimbabwean research assistants talked with community members about their experiences. One of their goals is to compare results across the regions.
Wanting to bring, again, a psychological or psychosocial dimension of data that can be analyzed alongside some of the biodiversity data, right? So to get a better picture of, you know, both the impacts of climate change, but then the success of these interventions, right? Is there a corresponding improvement in the psychosocial, the community health, the mental health of the individuals on the ground? Does that correspond to these conservation agricultural practices? So if you have more, more reliable crops, we might hope that, takes off some of the psychological stress on people and also, can just generally improve the well-being of the broader community.
I was curious what Job had heard from Lynx participants.
Well, the last few years have been intense drought. So the drought has really had an impact across the board, certainly on the crops across all three regions of Zimbabwe. So this has put a lot of pressure on food security. It's also put pressure on kind of migration, right? So people are leaving those areas to find work elsewhere when there's no agricultural productivity. One of the things I observed while we were there was the ancestral connection to rain. So rainmaking ceremonies and people's spiritual connection to the rainy season was something that a lot of people were talking about. Again, wondering why the rains hadn't come. And that was one of the things that came up when we were talking with people, the understanding of what climate change is. And so when we asked, well, why do you think there's a drought? What do you think the rains haven't come? Well, often we would hear people say, well, we stopped doing the ceremonies. We stopped doing these rainmaking rituals. And we've lost some of that knowledge.
So how does this kind of research support Zimbabweans?
My hope is to share their voices, for one. So kind of bring these, rural farmers who are directly impacted, bring their voices into the conversation so that they're being heard throughout this. What I'm hoping, to better understand and also kind of contribute to this is how people effectively adapt, right? How do people stay healthy? How can communities stay strong? And how can conflicts be resolved without escalating to a point of greater conflict. So that's my hope.
Job's experience hearing about rainmaking rituals really stuck with me. I was curious to learn more. Two people I met in Zimbabwe brought up the topic as well. They talked about the tension between traditional religions and other beliefs. In these conversations, I felt like they were grappling with this tension, finding a way to balance different understandings of the world in their own communities. When I visited Binga in northern Zimbabwe, we went to a hot spring where rainmaking rituals used to take place. As we listened to the gushing water and felt how hot it really is, our host, Bido Nlovu from KMTC Kulima Mbobumi Training Center, told me more about this place.
The hot springs are actually a sacred place where rainmakers would gather and do rainmaking ceremonies, appeasing ancestors for rains, as well as consulting ancestors to check with the season for the year. So there was this famous rainmaker called Maalila. He was a very great spirit medium that would actually get literally, physically get into the hot springs, talk to the ancestors. And then when we have a good season, he would emerge with green mealies, pumpkins, cucumbers. So that would actually signify a good season. When he just returns with nothing, then which means that season is more of like a drought, and they would then tell each other the strategies for surviving the season for the next coming year.
This area is now fenced off as a park, and there's an entry fee. Ceremonies can no longer be carried out here.
It's hard for the current generation to even believe such stories, because they think maybe these are just magical stories, or maybe Maalila was not rather a magician of some sort. But still, right now, we still have someone who has the spirit of Maalila. But of course, they cannot perform what Maalila was doing, like getting into the hot water and talking to the ancestors there and there.
Bido explained that because Lynx is committed to Indigenous knowledge systems, KMTC supports community members that still engage in rainmaking rituals. They have helped them create spaces to practice these ceremonies. For example, setting up gazebos in the community to provide shade. I had a similar conversation about Indigenous knowledge systems in the southwestern town of Gwanda. The implementing partner in Gwanda is BICCDS, the Brethren in Christ Compassionate and Development Services. We stopped by their office and spoke to Project Officer Guguletu Niati.
So Indigenous is something from within, something local, something within the context. Uh-huh. So with regards to climate change, you know, there used to be some things that we used to do in the past, which we are no longer practicing or which we no longer believe in, but they are proven to work, and they are cheap and all that. So we're trying to promote such things, you know. Taking care of the bush is one of them. That's why under the project we have the farmer-managed FMNR, farmer-managed natural regeneration of the forests, you know. Respecting the forest, those are practices that the elders used to have.
Guguletu emphasized the role of religious beliefs in understanding climate change and adaptation.
So we're talking to the religious leaders and traditional, and they were all saying that we serve one God, so God is angry, that's why all this is happening. So these are some of the Indigenous knowledge that we have. And then also there are also some Indigenous knowledge in terms of methods of farming as well, methods of preserving food, methods of preserving seed, and livestock, animals, their traditional ways or indigenous ways of managing that. So we're trying to resuscitate that. So it's something that we don't come bearing as links, but we are reminding the communities, what did you used to do in the olden days? So we want to go back to those nature-based solutions, those natural indigenous solutions.
Connecting with many different groups in their community has helped BIC CDS share adaptation initiatives.
So we are talking to the community as a whole. Church leaders can tell their congregation to do this. Traditional leaders can tell their people to do this. They've got a very big influence in terms of, we want them to use their influence for positive nature-based nature-based solutions to the problem. So they play a very critical role. And when we go to the communities, we do not say we are Christians, we believe in Christ. No, what's best for our community? Yeah, we have to respect those differences.
People might understand climate change differently, and different forms of adaptation might fit certain communities better. Supporting people where they're at is important. When it comes to climate change adaptation, there's a lot going on in our hearts and minds. Belief systems, psychological processes, and conversations across all of these realities. It's a lot. Paying careful attention to the human aspects of this climate challenge is vital to adaptation. Thank you to my guests, Job Arnold, Associate Professor of Psychology and Conflict Resolution Studies at Canadian Mennonite University, Baido Nlovu, Meal Officer at Kulima Mbobumi Training Center, and Guguletu Niati, Project Officer at Brethren in Christ Compassionate and Development Services. Digging In, Unearthing Stories of Climate Adaptation was written and produced by Kara LeBlanc, with story editing by David Balser and mixing assistance by Daryl Neustetter-Barg. Thanks for listening. I'm Kara LeBlanc. Links is a multi-year Mennonite Central Committee project helping climate-affected populations in Zimbabwe adapt to the changing environment. CMU is one of three research partnerships working alongside two Zimbabwe-based research partners and three local development organizations working across three districts. Links is administered in partnership with the Government of Canada and with funding from other generous donors.
Oh, Links is locally led, indigenous, nature-based solutions for climate change adaptation in Zimbabwe. Oh, Links is locally led.